This is Lars Lee. He is the one and only Leninologist. Who's author of What Is To Be Done, Lenin Rediscovered. And now this new work, Lenin. Just called Lenin. It's a biography of his life, which we'll talk about in a second. Lars Lee here is today specifically talking about the question of the democratic versus this. Is it just a democratic revolution?
Yeah.
And Lenin's conception of that and its evolution as a concept. So without any further ado, I'll let him start. Any questions or comments, obviously, after the session, as per usual.
What I want to do today is sort of a continuation of what I was doing the other time, which not to get into sort of the kind of arguments that, there's going to be no Lenin versus Trotsky. I'm going to try to skip past, not get involved in 1917 because those are the disputes of that period or how to interpret that. And I will say something about 1917. What I want to do is really focus on Lenin's vision of what a democratic revolution was all about, and to bring out again the enthusiasm and the passion that's there. In some sense, that's going to be more important than the details of permanent revolution, all that. I'm going to try to stay away from those kind of questions. Okay, so and I asked to give this talk. I asked the people here to give me another slot because, first of all, one reason was what's going on today. That was the obvious reason. The second one was all over the world. The second one was my own research is sort of moving in the direction of trying to find moving on from what I was doing in my big book about what is to be done to this sort of question, which came up more later. And then finally, it is a continuation of the scenario. I didn't quite realize this. It's a continuation of the scenario I talked about in the first session. Okay, what was that? Just to remind you or tell you if you weren't there then, that it was a sort of a leadership where there's a sort of the spark of revolution and fervor is passed and understanding is passed from the activist to the working class as a whole. Now you can sort of think of that as a series of concentric circles. So this is how Lenin and the others thought of it, where this message keeps on going out further out. Perhaps a little bit weaker in the outer sides, but still having a lot of its inspiring force. So after the working after this one I was talking about last time, worker to the working class, sorry, party to the working class. It's the next step that I want to talk about now, the working class to the people as a whole. So I'm going to be using a Russian word that I would like to introduce you to, narod, N-A-R-O-D. It's the word for the people, but it means the people as in the peasantry, the everyone who's exploited, everyone who's working with their hands, as opposed to the society, the elite in a very broad sense. And the populists, that word, the Russian populists that preceded the Marxists were the Narodniks. But actually, if you look at what Lenin had to say about the Narod, it's just as powerful a term. And I find one reason I want to use that word is that when I translate it and I translate people, that's a powerful enough word, but it just doesn't do it for me what Narod does. So I'm going to try to use that. So So Lenin had a vision, and it was of the working class as a whole being the leader of the Narod as a whole. And that's a more important part of his vision than I realized even when I wrote my book. And one of the things about this book, discovered this book, is just how central it was. And that's sort of a thesis. So I'm going to start off this by reading. I can't know if you can see this. It's Lenin giving a speech in the end of 1918. And at the end of 1918, the German Revolution had just started. It was the anniversary of the 1917 October Revolution. And he was very enthusiastic and happy. You can see it in this photo. And he said in this speech, the great World Historic Service of Marx and Engels, is that they showed the workers of the world their role, their task, their mission, namely, to be first to rise in the revolutionary struggle, the first to rise in the revolutionary struggle against capital, and to unite around themselves in this struggle all the working people and the all working and exploited people. He goes on to say, we are living through a happy time when this prophecy of the great socialist is beginning to be realized. But what I want this quote to bring out is that his conception of what Marx's conception was is that the workers are leading the people, are uniting around themselves in the struggle, all working and exploited people. That, I think, was the center of his vision. So with the democratic revolution, there's, a tendency on the left to look on it, the cup is half empty, and Lenin really looked on it as half full. That cliche sort of brings out for me what the issues are here. Like, if you sort of say, well, the democratic revolution, it's not the socialist revolution. It's partly stepped there. It's a little disappointing if we have to restrict ourselves to the democratic revolution. That's a kind of unfortunate. Well, in some sense, Lenin agreed with that. He was obviously aimed at the socialist revolution. But what I want to bring out, and this is the sort of what I will hope gets across, is that for Lenin, it was very much half full. That he was at all times extremely excited about the accomplishments and the epic grandeur and scope of what he called a people's revolution, a Narodnaya revolutsya, that he saw going on both in 1905 with the revolution, which I'll talk about right now, and later on even in 1917. Okay, so 1905 revolution. When I've been listening to the eloquent descriptions of the events around the world that we've heard at the conference, I kept thinking of the 1905 revolution, and I'm kind of hoping that maybe next year in this conference there'll be a talk on the 1905 revolution as we'll try to get it back more in our consciousness in Russia. Great revolution, heroic, and of course, I've picked up this pamphlet by 1905, the Great Dress Rehearsal. So this is a pamphlet which it's a good one. It's Pete Glatter has done some other stuff on 1905. But this cliche that we all know, the dress rehearsal, tends to sort of, you know, minimalize it, right? I mean, it's sort of great, but 1917 is greater. Well, 1917 is greater, but 1905 is great. Okay? And just to very vaguely remind you of the events of that year, sort of the society, because of the Russo-Japanese War, it was a long-standing crisis, but there was the war that Russia and Japan got into was the sort of final straw. Then in January 1905, there was Bloody Sunday, in which peaceful workers were led by reformists to present a petition to the power and the Tsar at the Winter Palace, and they were fired on, and many were killed, and that sort of did not look the Tsar's PR operations couldn't really put a spin on that, and the strikes continued throughout the year, and especially the two really great moments are in October of the year when it became more general, the whole country was shut down for a while, and the Tsar was forced to give a constitution to provide political freedoms of a sort. You know, he tried to claw it back later on. And then there's the exciting adventures, which you probably are more familiar with, perhaps with Trotsky and the Petersburg Soviet. And then finally, in some sense, the climax of this all was the Moscow December Uprising, where there was a pitched battle fought between the Moscow proletariat and the army. They were shelling Moscow, the army was. And to a large extent, the surrounding population was supporting the workers, which was one reason they could hold on so long. But, of course, they were defeated. And from then on, the revolution went into... that was sort of the high point. Lenin was, as usual, the last to get the message about the fact that the revolution was going down. He didn't take that sort of thing in. So Again, at the time, he thought the Russian Revolution, as it was called then, was the greatest. And I want to read just a couple of quotes here. One is like the epigraph to this my chapter, which is entitled The People's Revolution. Okay, he said this in 1906. During the whirlwind of the 1905 revolution, the proletarian, the railway man, the peasant, the mutinous soldier have driven all Russia forward with the speed of a locomotive. And right afterwards, excuse me, sort of flipping through here to get my quotes, but when it was going on the downgrade, he said, we should proclaim openly for all to hear that the Workers' Party sees in the direct revolutionary struggle of the masses in the October and December struggles of 1905 the greatest movements of the proletariat since the Commune, of Paris Commune in 1871. And then looking forward to the future, he said, the very first fresh breeze of freedom, the slightest relaxation of repression, will again inevitably call into being hundreds and thousands of organizations, unions, groups, circles, and undertakings of a revolutionary democratic nature. And this will as inevitably result in another whirlwind and a repetition of the October-December struggle, but on an immeasurably greater scale. So, and he wasn't, thank you, it wasn't in some sense looking forward to 1917. He's looking forward to a decisive repetition of 1905. And what was wrong with the 1905 revolution, great as its accomplishments were, was that it did not go to the end. And the next decisive repetition was to take the revolution to the end. Okay, so that brings me up to then what was the, in a sense, the Bolshevik recipe? What lessons did they get from 1905? What was their strategy? And I think we all have, including myself very much, focused too much on the disputes of 1903-04 prior to the revolution and not given enough stress to what Bolshevism got out of the revolution. And as a matter of fact, Lenin himself later sort of said that it was in 1905, not earlier, that Bolshevism as a political trend took shape. So this phrase, so I'm going to look at this again. I want to get back from sort of ideological frameworks and say, look at Bolshevism and Lenin's program as a Russian response to a Russian problem. So what is the question that everybody in Russia was facing, but Bolshevism had a particular answer, was what does Russia need and how is she to get it? Those are the two questions, right? Okay, so what Russia needs? Okay, the Bolshevik answer was a bourgeois democratic revolution to the end. Okay, now that phrase in Russian is do konca. If you ever see a Russian film at the end, you'll see konets. It means the end, you know. So, that phrase was sort of a key phrase that, one of these terms that evokes, we're duck on side. It was a real slogan, a real identifying mark for what later was known as old Bolshevism. The funny thing is, it's been systematically scrubbed out of the English translations of Lenin. So it took me a while to figure this out, because it was. And not only do they not translate it to the end, which is the only way to translate it, but they come up with paraphrases like to the conclusion or to a victory or all the way, or, but they use different ones all the time. So you absolutely cannot trace this in the English language, what he's saying about this. And it's so systematic that I'm trying to think, was there some sort of plot to obscure? And anyway, the result is that a particular kind of, it's just verbal, it's a verbal formula, but I think that it does mean that the translation is actually hurting you in your search for trying to understand this particular set of things and the continuity. Okay, so what does to the end mean in terms of what Russia needs? First, to the end means you want a revolution that will get rid of the Tsar completely and utterly, and he can't come back, and he's he's in, you know, like where Mubarak is or something like this. So, and also to bring in political freedom, that you need to move forward. Those are kind of the negative aims to get rid of the old system. But there's also the positive aims, and there was a sort of slogan that they had at the time of three things they called Democratic Republic, confiscation of the estates, of the landed estates, and 8-hour day, which is stood in for, it was a symbol of the worker policies. Okay, I just want to emphasize on each of these that these are not just little things. These are big, huge things that would transform Russia. The Democratic Republic was the way they conceived it was going to be much more advanced than anything that was seen in Europe at the time. It was going to be and based on, in many cases, commune institutions or the model of democracy that was set up in the commune. So that's one. Number two, the worker-oriented policies, 8-hour day, freedom of association, again, were meant to be like more. If the revolution was successfully brought, Dakansa, to the end, it would have freedom of association that would put to shame certainly Germany, probably France and England. And then finally, the confiscation of the states. Okay, we sometimes say land reform. Well, what did Lenin have in mind with that? He had a bigger vision than just sort of land reform or something like that. First, what I call liquidation of the gentry landowners as a class. Later on, Stalin, of course, used that phrase, liquidation of the kulaks as a class. That was a different kind of policy. But the phrase, I think, is what Lenin had in mind. He liquidation of this class, which he felt was the biggest reactionary class, the class that was really holding back Russia, the biggest survival of serfdom, was the landowning class. He wanted to remove their class basis and eliminate them. Then, but also a positive terms, he wanted to open, he thought that only this ambitious democratic land reform carried out by the peasants themselves will clear the way for capitalism. And again, though later on we may say, oh, well, just clear the way for capitalism, we look down on such petty aims, but the Lenin at the time was, again, extremely enthusiastic about it, and I want to quote something that from one of his books that he, this book, by the way, it's got the name of Agrarian Program of the Russian Social Democracy, Agrarian Program of Social Democracy in the First Russian Revolution, 1905-1907. For Lenin, this is one of his most important books, and and in 1917, about the first thing he said is, "Ah, the revolution! I can publish my book," because he was unable to publish. Really, if you look at his letters, almost the first thing. So, in any event, and it's interesting to me because that's not one of the ones any of us. I mean, I've finally got around to reading it, but anyways, what does he say about getting the peasants' revolution? Because a free mass of farmers may serve as the basis of the development of capitalism without any need of those landlords. Capitalist development along such a path should proceed far more broadly, freely, and swiftly owing to the tremendous growth of the home market and an upsurge in the standard of living, the energy, initiative, and culture of the entire population. So he sounds like, you know, kind of pro-capitalist, doesn't he? But he saw it as, again, this is something that this was going to make a Russia a better place if he could have that. And by the way, he also said, if we have this peasant revolution, we're going to we'll also have advanced democratic institutions. So that's, I wanted to give a sense of that this is the ambitiousness of the aims. Now, unfortunately, there's a term that people used at that time and still use to describe these aims. That term is the minimum program. Okay? So the minimum program. We're going to accomplish the minimum program. Well, already that sounds kind of unambitious. It sounds like, the minimum program, right. But so what has to be gotten over, I think, what I'd like to get over is – that the minimum program was really the maximum program, of what you could possibly accomplish under capitalism without going to socialism. And that the Bolshevik minimum, well, the social democratic and Bolshevik minimum program in 1905 was incredibly ambitious and utopian. So I'm going to quote, you won't like this, I don't think, maybe, I don't know. I'm going to quote Stalin on this topic. This is Stalin, not later. This is Stalin writing in 1905. Because at that time he was a sort of middle-level Bolshevik and was putting out pamphlets that were explaining in polemics that were putting out the Bolshevik point of view, and I find them a pretty good entree, partly because they're available in English for pretty much online and anywhere. So he's talking about what are the aims of the revolution, and he says so the provisional revolutionary government that they want to set up to do these aims. What are the jobs of this revolution, of this government? It must disarm the dark forces. Dark is the counter-revolutionary forces. Curb the enemies of the revolution so that they shall not be able to restore the Tsarist autocracy. It must arm the people and help to carry out the revolution through to the end. That's the phrase. It must introduce freedom of speech, of assembly, and so forth. It must abolish indirect taxes and introduce a progressive profits tax and progressive death duties. It must organize peasant committees which will settle the land question in the countryside. It must also disestablish the church and secularize education. In addition to these general demands, the provisional government, and this provisional government is not the provisional government that came up in 17. It's the opposite. Must also satisfy the class demands of the workers, freedom to strike and freedom of association, the 8-hour day, state insurance for workers, hygienic conditions of labor, establishments of labor exchanges, and so forth. So you can understand. I got to be moving fast here. Okay. You can understand that, again, I get these from the Stalin polemic against the Mensheviks. The Mensheviks, according to Stalin, called the Bolsheviks incorrigible dreamers, miserable Don Quixotes, who hankered after, quote, a false and utopian goal of implementing the minimum program to the full. So, the implementing the minimum program to the full, which they never, of course, they never got anywhere near in 1905, was a very ambitious program. Okay, so that's. And now I got to get on to the next question: is how to do it, and here again, the phrase "to the end" is going to give us our clue, which is. Okay, it's a bourgeois democratic revolution. Who is supposed to lead it, according to classic conceptions of this, of Marxist conceptions? Well, the bourgeoisie. But the bourgeoisie are not going to carry the revolution to the end, as anyone can see. And this is not something that the Russian people figured out on their own. This was sort of the failure of the bourgeoisie to carry out their own revolution. It was is obvious to a lot of people in Germany, too. So if the bourgeoisie don't carry out the revolution, who has to carry out the bourgeois democratic revolution? The proletariat has to carry out the bourgeois democratic revolution. And so it all gets very sort of slightly paradoxical and ironic. For example, I'm now quoting another person I used to get at the Kamenev, who doesn't, I suppose, have a very good reputation, but again, back in 1910, which I'm quoting from, was one of the premier Bolshevik writers, and was writing under Lenin's, you know, pretty much control. So he said in 1910, "Only the proletariat has shown itself capable, in the name of socialism, to provide an army of genuine fighters to resolve the tasks of the bourgeois emancipation of Russia. Only the proletarian movement incarnates the task of the bourgeois revolution thoroughly and completely." So that's, on the surface of it, very paradoxical. I could go into a long length of unpacking all that, but the main thing is, okay, the proletariat is going to lead the bourgeois revolution. Bourgeois is not going to lead the bourgeois revolution. So what does the workers have to do in order to do this? They have to lead the people, the narod. They have to make sure that the bourgeoisie who want to slow down or halt or the bourgeoisie want a revolution. They want a nice polite revolution that stops well short of a full democratic republic. Say they want a constitutional monarchy or something. They essentially don't want to empower the workers too much, et cetera, et cetera. So, if you want to carry out a democratic revolution at the end, you have to have the proletariat leading the peasants to do this. Okay, you can put this in rather cold strategic terms. By the way, the word hegemony, that's sort of where this word, that's what that means. Hegemony essentially means, in this period, proletariat as a class leading the peasants as a class. It's class leadership on that mass level. So you could put this in sort of, again, cold strategic terms. The proletariat needs to choose the class ally and the peasants and so forth and so on. But again, what I would like is that Lenin put it in much more exalted, dramatic terms. So last session I talked about if you have an exalted view of leadership, you have to have an exalted view of followership. So in this case, it's the peasants. The peasants are the followership. And again, here's what Lenin says about the peasants. He says, in order to have the successful conclusion of the new 1905 that he was looking forward to, what do you need? From the standpoint of the Philistine or the Philistine historian, and again, the Philistine is always the enemy, who are very unusual and optimistic assumptions. He puts optimistic in irony quotes. It requires tremendous peasant initiative, revolutionary energy, purposelessness, organization, and a wealth of creative activity by the Narod. And then I put in my book, this last remark expresses very hard of Lenin's outlook. Rejection of Philistine skepticism in favor of optimistic romanticism about the creative activity of the Narod. Have I got time to do all this? I'm going to read, so as far as what he thought of the leadership, I'm going to read a section from the book here. In early 1906, Lenin directly revealed his deep emotional reaction to the revolution he was living through, and as usual, the occasion was a polemic against his lifelong enemy, Philistine skepticism. Lenin's target was a liberal professor, an article written by who the professor bemoaned what he called, quote, the revolutionary whirlwind, a destructive and unhinged period during which the unreason of the mob left no room for insight and intellect, as opposed to the safe and sane days of reasonable and constructive progress. Lenin exploded against this attempt to, quote, spatter revolutionary periods and revolutionary methods of creating history with the slime of Philistine indignation, condemnation, and regret. In response, he made a stirring defense of the insight of the masses. And so this, I'm sort of paraphrasing and quoting Lenin, but I won't go into exactly which is paraphrasing, which is quote. Led by the urban workers, the masses had effectively wielded a purely proletarian weapon, the mass political strike, on a scale unprecedented even in the most developed countries. They had set up new political authority institutions, the Soviets, peasant committees, and other organizations. These new institutions were distinguished by extreme democratism, a public authority power of lust, open to all, one that carried out all its functions before the eyes of the masses, that was accessible to the masses, springing directly from the masses in a direct and immediate instrument of the mass of the Narod, of its will. Lenin did regret the anarchic violence of the masses, not because it was violent, but because it was anarchic. As Lenin expressed it a little bit later, a revolutionary social democrat should never, quote, indulge, quote, in hackneyed Philistine petty bourgeois immoralizing about violence. The proper response was rather to transform, quote, aimless, senseless, sporadic acts of violence into purposeful mass violence. And mass violence means violence by the masses. Basic premise of his scenario had always been, And again, so 1905 was again, I'm going to read this one because it again connects to, I read some stuff last time where Lenin looks back and says the Russian revolutionaries of the old days, understood, not saying it out loud like my brother, their dream is now coming true. So, okay. Is it good, this is Lenin speaking, is it good that the Narod should apply unlawful, irregular, unmethodical, and unsystematic methods of struggle, such as seizing their freedom and creating new, formerly unrecognized and revolutionary authority, that it should use force against the oppressors of the Narod? Yes, you got to know. It is very good. It is the supreme manifestation of the Narod struggle for freedom. It marks that great period when the dreams of freedom cherished by the best men and women of Russia, like his brother, are translated into practice, when freedom becomes the practice of the vast masses of the Narod and not merely of individual heroes. Okay, so, well, I could go on with all this a long time. I'm now going to jump ahead, and since time is running out, I'm going to skip 1917, which is just as well because that would bog us down and things, but in, right, in various arguments and things. But I will say this. In April, 1917, Lenin came back and he got in disputes, and one of the things he says is, the bourgeois democratic revolution is over. We don't have to worry about that anymore. He did say that in April 17, but what people haven't really noticed is that he changed his mind on that. That he didn't think it was over in spring 1917. And as a matter of fact, he thought the October Revolution was necessary to bring it to an end. I could give some quotes on this, but I want to switch ahead. I've handed out, unfortunately, underestimating the dimensions of this conference, I did not make enough to it. I'm sorry about that. I'll try to provide, provide the text to people here, but anyone who wants to can get through me through email, but I have to send it to you. But I will read some of it. What this is an article from 1921. I've taken excerpts and molded them around to make my point. This is not, you know, exactly what Lenin wrote. He wrote it in at the time of the October Revolution fourth anniversary of the October Revolution 1921. In my opinion, this should be almost be seen as the first or one of the first of Lenin's last writings, because his health problems in particular started right getting very serious. He went on long leaves starting right about this period. And I don't think there's anything as systematic as this when he looks back. So this is an important and interesting an article where Lenin comes as close to saying, what did we do? What was October all about? But I want to make the point here, however, is so he says, okay, first I want to talk about the bourgeois democratic tasks that we did, and now then I'll talk about the socialist tasks. And it's the difference of mood between the accomplishments of the bourgeois democratic revolution and the socialist. That struck me and was tried to bring out. And I should let me say that this is 1921, so the new economic policy or NEP had started almost a year earlier. But this is not why Lenin is a little down about these socialist accomplishments, because it had been going on for before that. But that's another question. I just want to say it. So when you look at the socialist one, I'm just going to sort of characterize it briefly because that's not the topic here. But what you find when he says about that is the following things. First, he goes through the various the Soviets, the imperialist war, the transformation of the economy, and to some extent agrarian reform. He almost emphasizes that we've made small progress. We haven't done much on any of these things. For example, the laying of economic foundations is the one we've come least to accomplishing, and that's our most important, most difficult task. Mistakes and failures, he sort of, again, wants to emphasize that we made lots of mistakes and failures, and he says this phrase, mistakes and failures, 3 or 4 or 5 times. He emphasizes again and again that struggle will tell how we succeed, which can be translated as, I see great difficulties ahead, especially when you put it, what else are we saying? He emphasizes that probably it won't be the Russians who will be the first to the goal. But we do have the great credit that we started things. So, for example, he says, the first victory is not the final victory about imperialist war, getting out of the war. And it was achieved by our revolution, October Revolution, at the price of incredible difficulties and hardships, at the price of unprecedented sufferings, accompanied by a series of serious failures and mistakes on our part. Without failures and mistakes, how could a single backward Narod be expected to achieve victory over the imperialist wars? We have begun this job. It is not important to the proletarians of which nation will carry this business to the end, Dakansa, nor when at the date and time they do it. The essential thing is that the ice has been broken, the road is open, the way has been shown. So I would summarize the mood of this whole section as grim determination. And I would put equal emphasis on the determination and on the sense of grimness. That contrasts with his sense of the bourgeois democratic revolution. And again, what I'm not trying to get into the theory of how the bourgeois democratic revolution relates to the socialist revolution. I just want to get across his sense of pride and excitement about the accomplishments of October as a bourgeois democratic. Sure. The immediate and most urgent task of the revolution in Russia, this is Lenin speaking, was a bourgeois democratic task. Namely, to destroy the survivals of medievalism and sweep them away to the end, to purify Russia of this barbarism, of this shame, and to remove this immense hindrance to any kind of culture and any kind of progress in our country. And we can justifiably take pride on having carried out this purification much more decisively, rapidly, boldly, and successfully, and is, from its point of view on the very depths of the mass of the Narod, much more widely and deeply than the great French Revolution over 125 years ago. Then he goes into the specifics. What did we do? We got rid of the monarchy. We got rid of the system of socialist states. Okay, it's a Slovia system. But that essentially is a different citizenship rights for different portions of the people, different grades of citizenship. And as he says, we got rid of them all. And even in advanced democratic countries, there are still traces of this. And Australia, I gather, has this problem. We got rid of landed ownership, the status of women, religion, and the oppression of nationalities. He says, take religion, or women's lack of rights, or the oppression of inequality of the non-Russian nationalities. I'm sort of jumping around a bit here. These are all problems of the bourgeois democratic revolution. We have fought and are fighting religion in earnest. We are granted all the non-Russian nationalities their own republics or autonomous regions. We in Russia no longer have anything so base, mean, and repellent as the lack or inequality of rights for women, that disgusting survival of serf society and medievalism, which is being refurbished by the avaricious bourgeoisie and the dull-witted and frightened petty bourgeois in every other country in the world without exception. We left not a stone, not a brick of that ancient edifice, the social estate system. Even the most advanced countries, such as Britain, France, and Germany, have not completely rid themselves of the traces of this system to this day. And we couldn't have done this. We couldn't have done this if we hadn't been socialists. That is to say, one of the great things about socialists is that they are the ones, and no one else, who can carry the democratic revolution to the end. That's part of the whole idea of the Bolshevik conception. Okay, so I wanted to get across this again to get back to sum up that it's. That in Lenin's view, no matter what we're doing with ideological frameworks of how you get from one to the other and this and that, he had a half full, highly enthusiastic maximum program approach to to the importance, to the scale, to the greatness of these set of tasks. And so what's striking when you read this in 1921 is that he's still talking about the bourgeois democratic revolution. There wasn't any bourgeois in Russia at the time. I mean, there were, but they were not in power. The bourgeois hadn't carried out. They had nothing to do with it. They were against it. They were fighting against it at all times. So why does he still call it the bourgeois democratic revolution? And I personally think that it's just because of sort of a tradition of 19th century talking about this. And there's another phrase that he used that I think is the one we should use, maybe. The Narodnaya Revolutsiya, the People's Revolution. And maybe we should be the center of what we're thinking about, and not so much important as to whether it's bourgeois tasks, democratic tasks, socialist tasks, maybe we should not stress the differences between those so much, and we should think be more making the center of what we think about the Narodnaya Revolutsiya, the People's Revolution.